Welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast, where we strategize all things special ed. If you're a new parent to special education or a seasoned parent sitting at the IEP table, come along and join our conversation today. I am your host, Wendy Taylor, a mom and special educator. I have sat on both sides of the IEP table as a parent and a professional. Over the last 25 plus years, I have made it my passion and mission to help parents and professionals bridge learning gaps, access special education services, and build kick-butt IEPs. If you want more tips, show us some love on social at Learning Essentials. If you are new to our podcast, give us a follow. Now let's get ready to strategize special education style. Welcome, welcome. Hi, Amanda. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here, Wendy.
Can you kick off our conversation by introducing yourself and giving us any kind of personal journey into this world of talking about preteens, teenage girls specifically with ADHD?
Absolutely. So my name is Amanda Sobeck-Johnston. I am a clinical psychologist and I am the founder and CEO of Virginia Family Therapy. And before I was working at a group mental health practice, what I was doing was specializing in teenage and pre-teenage girls and working with their families. So girls that have ADHD, anxiety, depression, mood disorders, kind of anything, because I love working with teenage girls. By the way, I also have three sons, as I am an expert in teenage girls, which is fun.
Which is funny you say that, because I'm always say, you know, I'm a mom of three boys. And then people say, ask me about a girl. And I'm like, I don't know anything about girls.
Oh, I know.
In my professional world, I know a lot about girls, but that's kind of how I say it in my family.
I know way too much about working with girls. And also, I was a school psychologist and a teacher for over 6 years. So I have really been trying, I believe in being where the kids are, which is in schools. And so I know a lot about schools and school systems and how to help girls within those settings.
This is incredibly important. So many parents call, they're overwhelmed, they're not sure what to do, and they're questioning, is there an intentional issue? And I think it presents differently for different students. And so I'm excited for us to kind of dive into that. How do you define ADHD?
So ADHD overall is difficulty with executive function. So essentially, if you've ever seen the movie Inside Out with the cartoon, and there were in the top of the brain where all the emotions were and all the things that were happening, that's kind of the command center. And so your executive function is the command center of where you put your attention, how you transition, how you plan for the future, how you remember, how quickly you can remember things that already happened, and how you kind of make meaning of all of it at once. And so difficulties with executive functioning are linked to ADHD. There's a lot of crossover talk right now. I'm not an expert in the crossover talk, but I am an expert in figuring out who has ADHD and who doesn't. So typically, when you're thinking about ADHD, we think about folks that are kind of off the wall, right? Like we have a typical image in our head of impulsivity, difficulty getting things done, forgetting things, hitting, saying things we don't want to say. And a lot of kids do that, right? A lot of kids demonstrate ADHD in that way. And that's what we call the hyperactive type. There is another type of ADHD, which is inattentive type. And difficulty with inattentive type is where you kind of lose focus. Someone might give you a direction and you forget to do it. You, I don't know, gaze off into counting the swans that you see outside. You forget what you're saying mid-sentence, or you really have a hard time getting things done. You don't look like you're having a hard time, but on the inside, you really are.
How do we then know in terms of, you know, does it look the same for both students who identify as male or female?
That's a great question. And I think the answer is overall, boys can have inattentive type of ADHD or the hyperactive type of ADHD. They can have both, and girls can have both as well. There's also combined type, which is a little bit of all of it.
Got it. So, and when I say that, I mean, in terms of like the assigned at birth, not identifying our pronouns now. I just wanted to clarify in terms of like genetically speaking, what we're talking about. So can you bring us into the world then of girls with ADHD? What are those signs? And we talked about a little bit about the signs and symptoms, but can you just kind of help us see when those would pop up and what would a parent need to look for? Those kind of things.
Absolutely. So while girls can have ADHD hyperactive, or they can have inattentive type, right? More than likely, girls demonstrate more symptoms of inattention than the hyperactivity, right? So they don't necessarily always look to the outside observer like they're struggling with ADHD. So when we think about when kids go to school, the kids that are getting into trouble, the kids that the teachers notice are the kids that are loud. They're the kids that are calling out. They're the kids that are saying something kind of nasty to the kid next door to them. They're the kids that are forgetting their homework. And so those types of signs are seen in the hyperactive population, right? Girls or folks that are struggling with the inattentive type absolutely fly under the radar way more obviously because no one is paying attention to them. Their behaviors are not kind of screaming, I'm having difficulty. So someone with inattentive type might take forever to get their homework done. They might get to a test and absolutely freeze and not be able to remember anything and stop halfway through. They might have a hard time figuring out how to write their assignment from the board onto their paper. They might just stare out of the window the entire time, or they can chat with their friends all day long. That's how I was in school. And a lot of times girls, when they're in school, they have a hard time focusing on what's at hand. So they might be chatting with the person next to them. They might be singing out loud and maybe getting into some trouble that way. They might be writing notes to all of their friends. So it can look very differently than the quote unquote typical boy presentation, but the impact on how kids are doing academically can still be the same.
What does data tell us in terms of statistically the inattentive type diagnostic part?
You know, I actually don't know the statistics on inattentive type in particular, but I do know this, that the CDC just released an aggregate of data from 2016 to 2019. So, you know, they look at time chunks and it takes a while to get the data up and out into the public. So this is the most recent aggregate study I found. And what they found is that folks from ages 6 to 11, 10% of the population is diagnosed with ADHD, whether that's inattentive or with hyperactivity. 13% of the population is diagnosed between 12 and 17, ages 12 and 17. But boys are 2 times more likely than girls to be diagnosed with ADHD. It's 13% for boys, and girls are at 6% of the population. And what studies are suggesting is that there's actually more of a 1-to-1 ratio of boys and girls who are struggling with ADHD, but the diagnoses are not bearing that out.
So what can parents do to kind of start thinking about this and looking at it so that they can start taking action if they have a daughter and they're concerned?
That's a great question. So number one, I would really start looking at some of the signs and symptoms. Y'all, I would Google ADHD in girls. Let's be honest, they have some great lists that are pretty reliable and they will be very, very specific. So if we think about academically, what are they struggling with? Are they having a hard time getting their homework in? Is their backpack a disaster? Are they forgetting their lunch? Are they getting into trouble for talking? Are they not following directions? Is their handwriting atrocious? Those are some pretty good academic indicators. And there are also some social emotional indicators. Are they getting into trouble with their friends because they say something kind of mean and they don't mean to? Are they emotionally labile, which just means they're having outbursts because they're having a hard time holding it together? Do they have a hard time initiating tasks, starting something? Do they have a hard time with long-term planning? Those can all be some of the social indicators. And another thing I always want to tell parents, I always see parents in my office and they say, there is no way that my child has ADHD because when they start doing something, they are so focused that I can't get them to do anything else. So in my family, I have kids with ADHD and my kids will work on Legos for 4 hours straight. They will sit with Legos. They will sit with a book. They will sit on YouTube in their dream world for 4 hours and you can't get their attention. But there is a piece of ADHD that's called hyperfocus. So if you have one of those kids that gets into those 4 hour stints of only focusing on one thing, that's actually a deficit in executive function and is related to ADHD. So if they can hyperfocus, that's also a sign that they might be struggling.
Do educators need more training on recognizing these signs and symptoms? My guess is yes.
I think absolutely educators need more training on recognizing signs and symptoms, specifically of inattentive type and how ADHD impacts girls. I also think it's going to be hard, right? Educators are people. They are doing so much right now, and they are going to be responding to the kids that are having a hard time in the classroom, the loud ones, the ones that are disrupting other people's learning. And in many ways, we want them to be doing that because that is getting in the way of everyone's learning. And we want them to take some time and slow down and think, who seems to be staring off? Who seems to be pretty bright verbally when I interact with them, but never seems to get their homework in? Who is doing a lot of chatting and is only turning things in at the very last minute, very messy? There are all these more subtle signs that if you pay attention to them, you will notice that the girls or folks with inattentive type are struggling.
So let me ask you this then, Amanda. So if I am an educator in a classroom and I'm noticing these symptoms, my guess would be I would just share that with the parent if the parent asked me.
Right? Absolutely. That's a great point. So I think number one, if you're a parent, you should ask your teacher, have you noticed any of these difficulties? You can also say, I've been doing all of this at home to help, and start thinking about what are you doing at home to support your daughter in their ability to access the curriculum? Are you setting them up? Do you have your pencil in place? Are you going through their planner with them? If you're a parent and you're spending a ton of time with your kid's planner, you're likely providing support that's allowing them to be success and may even be masking where they're struggling or masking the ADHD. I also think it's really important to recognize that teachers, many therapists, and even medical professionals, doctors, are drastically underdiagnosing ADHD in girls. So you might suspect it. You go to the pediatrician and you ask, and they might say, no, like they're doing fine, no big deal. And they're doing the best they can. But I will frequently see that daughter 3 years later and say, this is ADHD. Let's get them some support. And let's move them forward. And that can be really beneficial.
So how does a student get diagnosed with ADHD in terms of girls? So we're focusing on girls. And then I, as a parent, you're right. There's a lot of times in speaking with parents that they are doing a lot at home. And even when I've had consults with neuropsychologists in terms of, you know, what is working, what is not working, a lot of times parents are doing this at home to support this. So how does one then say, if I go to the pediatrician with my daughter and I'm like, you know what, this is what's happening, I'm doing this at home to help. Is there something specific I need to ask for to seek a diagnosis? And then two, how do we diagnose?
That's a great question. So I think the pediatrician is the easiest first step. You already have a relationship with them. You know, they know you more than likely. And so you'll go and you say, I suspect they might be struggling with ADHD. And let me say this before I forget, because sometimes I get a little inattentive, is if your child is always late and you're always fighting about getting places on time, that's another really good indicator that they might be struggling with this. But if you go to the pediatrician, they will give you typically what's called a Vanderbilt. And a Vanderbilt is 25 to 50 questions that they will ask you about your child. And they will score the Vanderbilt. And they will say, oh, your child is above the norm or below the norm on various indicators. Typically, those indicators are more about the hyperactive tendencies with ADHD. They will be more about the externalizing factors. So are they hitting? Are they getting in trouble? Are they chatting too much? Are they impulsive? There's less information on the Vanderbilt that can be indicative of the inattentive type. So it puts parents in a little bit of a bind because the initial screening tool at the pediatric practices, it doesn't always recognize the symptoms that girls have.
So let me ask you, I have a couple thoughts there. Then again, I'm a parent. Mm-hmm. And I am suspecting something. I go to my pediatrician. I think I'm asking the right questions. They give me the Vanderbilt. How would I know as a parent that I need to do additional investigation? Because a lot of times it's like, well, I went to the pediatrician. The pediatrician said she's fine.
Absolutely. Okay. I think that's a great question. I think your next step is you can call the school and talk to the folks at the school, talk to the guidance counselor, talk to their teacher. You can talk to the school psychologist and go through the steps that you do such a nice job, Wendy, of talking about, and get the school involved and collect data from the school. And then I think you take, if you're getting stuck, you take that data to a therapist, you take them to a psychologist that can help you, because more than likely, if they have untreated and undiagnosed ADHD, they're having a hard time somewhere, right? And so a therapist can really help you look and figure out, is this ADHD? And honestly, whether it's ADHD or not, they can put some interventions in place that can help your child be more successful, right? Like I'm just thinking, my 6-year-old has a terrible bedtime routine, miserable, we're arguing, we're fighting, it's absolutely no fun. Now I'm a psychologist, so I know the answer is just to create a bedtime checklist, right? And that's easy. I'll create a bedtime checklist tonight. I'm going to at least try to follow through on that. But that's an intervention that I will put in place that will make bedtimes easier for our family. So a therapist can help you come up with strategies to help your kid manage their symptoms of ADHD. Beyond that, you can also take your child to a psychiatrist. A psychiatrist is more trained. They can usually do like a 2-hour intake that's beyond what a pediatrician can do. And they can tell you at the end of it, hey, you know, ADHD, no ADHD. You can talk about medication and the benefits or the not benefits. You might not choose medication, but you're still going to get the diagnosis and have understanding. And that can be very useful as well.
If I can talk about assessments again. So if our ADHD screeners and assessments, or are you saying that they're normed towards boys and then that then underdiagnoses the girls, are there any assessments that can then do a better job mm-hmm. on identifying the inattentive component that would impact a girl more so statistically?
So I'm not quite sure if the Vanderbilts are normed towards males, but what I do know is that the indicators that they're asking about are more related to ADHD with hyperactivity, right? The questions are less related to inattentive type and more related to the hyperactivity. So what you can do is if you continue to suspect it, you can ask your school to evaluate your child for special education and see if, because you suspect that they have another health impairment or ADHD. And if you go through that process, the school psychologist hopefully will be able to use more specialized tools in order to diagnose or not diagnose, or in order to identify or not identify your daughter with ADHD.
As a former school psychologist, mm-hmm. can you kind of walk parents and professionals that may have not sat at an IEP table, what does that look like from a school psychologist lens if you have a parent saying, I have these concerns, I already went to the pediatrician and this is my information. What does that look like for a parent or a professional in terms of a role as a school psychologist?
I think, to be honest, as a school psychologist, when faced with this, one of the issues that is going to be challenging is the fact that girls in general tend to have more compensatory behaviors than their male counterparts. So what I mean by that is they may have ADHD, but they are also really, really anxious and really, really people-pleasing. Y'all, I'm doing drastic, broad sweeps. So this isn't completely true for everyone, but anxiety and ADHD are very, very linked, because if you know you're forgetting something, you're going to be worried that you're going to forget something, which then makes you forget more things. So there's this cycle between anxiety and ADHD that is very, very present in girls. So when girls, or when folks in general, get anxious, they can overcompensate. They can become very, very rigid, very, very strict in what they're doing, very, very attentive to what other people want and what other people need. And because they're putting so much energy into doing things right, that they are compensating for their difficulty with attention. And so that's where it's going to be difficult as a school psychologist, seeing, wow, this kid is doing pretty well academically overall, and I don't know how much time or how much energy this girl is putting in to be able to achieve at the level that she's achieving at. And I think that is where parents and psychologists and educators need to have a conversation. What is it taking to get this girl to where she is despite the difficulty that she's having with attention?
Yeah. And I always say that, what is the time, energy, and effort that goes into that processing, memory, and attention as it relates to your school day? Not all academics, but your school day. And that is a huge part. And you brought up the anxiety and the ADHD. How do we, as either professionals or parents or both, understand that comorbidity, that co-occurring, like what comes first? Is always a magic question, right? Is it the anxiety that's making it look like it's attention, or even ADHD and autism? How does a parent or a professional determine the best course of action if we sense this comorbidity?
So honestly, a parent doesn't do it on their own, right? You need a team of folks that can help you figure this out. So my husband's a child psychiatrist, and we talk about this all day, every day, because I send him a ton of folks and he sends me some of his folks. And one of the things we talk about is this anxiety ADHD cycle. So again, you have difficulty remembering something, you get anxious because you know that you forget things, which then makes you forget more things. So in that situation, the ADHD comes first, right? You're forgetting things and then you get anxious. However, there's also a group of folks that are just really, really anxious. And because they're so anxious, they're always worrying in their head, or they're getting distracted by their worries. And once they get distracted by their worries, they start forgetting things because they're spending all of their time worrying. And so then that leads to difficulty with anxiety again. So either way, there's an anxiety ADHD feedback loop. And sometimes it's just a crapshoot which one you treat first, just to be honest with you. Yeah. Therapists and psychiatrists and people at school can help, but sometimes you try one, that doesn't work, you try the other one next and you see where you get.
So how do we weave this into the school day for a kid in terms of getting support, whether it's through a 504 or an individualized education plan?
I think it can look a lot of different ways. So I think a lot of folks could benefit from extended time. A lot of folks can benefit from preferential seating. A lot of folks can benefit from help with getting, honestly, just getting the information from the board to your planner about what the homework is. There are a lot of supports and accommodations that the schools know and utilize well that they can help a girl with ADHD be better able to succeed in the classroom.
And to kind of piggyback on that, I always encourage parents to prioritize what they see as an impact. Like you just said, if it is writing down the homework, if that's your major impact, as an example, what can we do? You know, I have some students that they write their planner down, then they leave their planner, right? Or they're unable to, just because of the writing component, whether it's the parameters of the box that they have to write into, or that near far copying and the processing within that. And then somebody says something and I've written HW for homework, but I didn't write the page number, the book, or any of those things. Thinking about taking each of those priorities and then thinking about what can we do to support that individual child as a parent. Again, looking back at what you're doing. So I know on smartphones, it's called Google Keep. And I know some kids that have really benefited from that because a lot of times they're not losing their phone. Mm-hmm. So then they have that home with them. They can speak into it instead of having the physical right. So kind of just prioritizing. And if it is preferential seating isn't always let me sit in the front of the room. For some students, it may be, let me sit near the door because I need to fidget, or sit in the back, or wherever that may look like. So having really good conversations as a team. And I think you, as you said, that is amazing in terms of what can we do as educators, professionals, parents, come together to collaborate and to support that student with their supports at school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I will add to, we talked a lot about kids almost over-focusing or overcompensating for their difficulty in this area. We're also going to have a crew of folks who are getting stuff done at the very last minute, right? And they need that procrastination and that pressure to actually follow through. So I use myself as an example all the time. I used to write my papers in class on my leg, right? And I would tell my teacher every day, sorry, our printer broke, but I would just write them and turn it in. And I was very fortunate that I could compensate with my other verbal skills, because you can tell I like to chat. So I was compensating with my verbal skills and able to get it done when I needed to. But if you have a child who's always kind of sliding in at the last minute with disorganized, messy work, that's absolutely another sign or symptom of ADHD.
So how do we know what's working and serving the student and then what's not? Like your example is perfect, right? So was that an impact for you to write the paper on your leg, or was it not?
I mean, honestly, it worked for me, right?
Not to put you on the spot.
Yeah, no, it was working for me. It, you know, I ended up going to UVA and I have my PhD, and writing my dissertation was very, very hard. And we have a whole different generation of young women that are in college now and 40-year-olds that are getting identified with ADHD now that were never identified when we were younger. And so we have all of these compensatory behaviors that have worked and have served us well, but getting a diagnosis has been, for some folks, absolutely life-changing because they feel like they finally understand what's been so hard for them. And I think that that has been really interesting. You know, I did a podcast on girls, ADHD, and me probably a year ago. And I get more responses from women saying, I finally got diagnosed after listening to that, than any other podcast I have released, because girls have been missed for so long. We've been really, really missed. And I think it's exciting that people are finding out and really starting to talk about it.
And to your point there, right? So you have been successful and these women have been successful and they're holding their lives and their career and their families and such, but let's not dismiss or diminish this running internal record that you're having with inside, right? Because again, back to that energy effort that you have to put in to get things done, to keep things together, to mask what's happening, but internally, you're fully aware.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that can be difficult about ADHD. I believe this is true for boys. I know this is true for girls. You can be a high achiever and still have ADHD. And I think that is where people have gotten confused for a very long time. There are plenty of folks out there that are doing very, very well, but are working so hard to be able to get there. I even say for me, I didn't realize I had ADHD until honestly through the pandemic, because I exercised for an hour to an hour and a half every day for most of my life. And once you took that exercise away, because exercise is a great way to manage ADHD, once you took that exercise away, I couldn't focus. And I took it away because I was with my three kids all day, every day, y'all.
Locked inside. Mm-hmm. Gyms were closed.
Absolutely. But that's what a lot of folks do. So you might have a girl who is an athlete who's doing really well running around and really putting in a lot of these interventions that we would put in place for folks with ADHD. And when you take some of them away, whether it's, you know, whether it's a really good planner or whether it's an hour with your mom every night going through each piece of homework or whether it's exercise, you take all of those interventions out and you see how hard the kids are really, really working.
So when could a parent start to notice signs, right? So is it the frog in the hot water analogy where you put a frog in the water and the water slowly starts to boil and then they don't realize it until it's, you know, we've hit a... Mm-hmm. a wall, so to say, because I think then if you're tiny, you think, okay, well, they're really engaged. They like, you know, whatever it may be. And you kind of start to put these into place and maybe not even recognizing that you're putting some accommodations into place for your child.
That's a great question. It absolutely makes sense. And I think you just said this on my podcast is that there are some key ages and stages for kids. And you said third, sixth, ninth. And then I think entering college in that first year of college, that's where we're getting these new, larger developmental tasks. We're asking more of kids. And so those, if they have a hard time getting to that phase and succeeding in that phase, that's where we're going to see kind of a jump in difficulty, a jump because the demands are higher in each of those grades. But I also think, you know, like last night as a parent, I realized I'm spending an hour trying to get my six-year-old ready for bed. An hour, y'all. It is ridiculous. And that is a frog in boiling water, right? That's like, oh, it was 20 minutes, then it was 25, then it was 30. And all of a sudden you're like in a deep power struggle, but also a deep routine that when you take a step back, you're like, this does not make sense. This doesn't make sense as a parent. So if you find yourself in that situation where you're doing your homework with your child, you're doing a half an hour of prep on their planner, you are reviewing their essays for grammatical errors every single night in order to keep them afloat. And you look back and you just say, this doesn't make sense for what I think they're capable of and for their age. If you really feel like there's a mismatch, that's a great sign as a parent that it might be worth looking into and just Googling signs and symptoms of ADHD for girls.
Dr. Google solves a lot.
You know, I'm like deep thoughts, y'all. Everyone's probably really glad they're listening to me.
How can parents advocate best if they are seeking to assess their student for ADHD? Or what type of language should they use? I know we've talked about this in the beginning, but like, what would be your best? You're like, okay, here's my low-hanging fruit for
you all. I think parents are going to have to not only advocate for their daughters, but also educate for your daughters. So when I say look at a Google, whatever the first thing that comes up is, print that out, take it out and write specific examples of where your child is struggling in each of these places and what you've seen, and then take that to the school. Because in many instances, you're also going to be educating whoever's on the other end about the signs and symptoms for girls. Now, when you look at that checklist, your daughter might have ADHD and is not going to ring the bell on every single sign and symptom. They will likely not have an issue in some of those places and really have an issue in other places. So be honest. We do something called confirmation bias, which is where we want our kids or we think our kids have something. So then we only look for data that supports that, right? So you got to be really honest when you're looking at that checklist and know you're going to have some stuff that hits and some stuff that doesn't, but take that to the school with you.
And every kid is different, right? Every kid presents different. I mean, I know just even in my personal family, people have said, oh, your kids must all be the same. I'm like, they are not even the same different chapters within a book. They're on different shelves of that library. There's
a million.
Also different. And I think what you just said is incredibly important. I tell parents that the same in terms of collecting data with specific examples to whether you're bringing it to your pediatrician, to a psychologist for assessment, or the school. Make sure that you have clear data that shows that impact so that you can, I love that, educate the people, that the folks that are maybe not seeing it, and just to be able to kind of correlate, I'm seeing this at home, I am now seeing this at school, and here's my specific data to support that, because I think that empowers parents to be a part of that team.
And there's nothing, you know, there are great people on the other side of that table in schools that maybe graduated, you know, even 5 or 10 years ago, folks weren't talking about ADHD in girls. So they could be on the top of their game in so many ways and still not know this, and that's okay. So coming to them with love and support and understanding is probably going to get you farther than coming in like, look at this, I got it off Google and here are my examples. You want to work together with the folks at school.
On that same conversation on data, are there certain types of data that parents should be looking for if they're bringing this to the school or they're bringing it to the IEP team?
I think anything that is measurable is going to be useful. So if you're looking to say, you know, it took my child a really long time to do their homework, well, let's get a little more specific, right? It took my child 32 minutes to get these 5 questions done. It took my child 20 minutes to go from walking to their backpack to get their homework to sitting down at the kitchen table to start doing it. It took my child said this not so nice thing to another girl, and they spent 2 hours crying and in drama and texting with all of their friends because of this impulsive thing that they said. So really looking for measurable data around time and quantity, because that's what the school is going to be looking for. They want to know how long and how frequently and also how intense.
Yes, exactly. That intensity, frequency, and duration is key. So we kind of mentioned a little bit about medication, but can we talk a little bit about kind of medication and or therapy options for parents?
Absolutely. So medication in general, there's an entire group of different medications that treat ADHD. I'm not a psychiatrist. My husband would be very angry if he heard me talking about it this way, because truly, psychiatrists are the experts, and pediatricians are the experts on this. And medication can be a useful tool. The thing with ADHD medication is it can be prescribed by a psychiatrist or a pediatrician, and you don't have to take it every day. So there are some medications like SSRIs that help with anxiety and depression that you take those every day because your body needs them in your system every day. ADHD medications you can take when you need them, and you cannot take them on the weekends. You cannot take them over summer break. It doesn't matter whether you take them one day or not the other day.
Let's talk about therapy.
Absolutely. So a lot of times with kids, we see kids come in and they struggle with a certain set of difficulties. So let's say the difficulty is bedtime routine is terrible and miserable, and there's a lot of fighting around it. So as a therapist, whether the child has ADHD or not, we can put certain interventions in place to support that bedtime routine. So I can say that kid has ADHD And let's create a checklist, because they can look at the checklist, step one, step two, step three, it's done. I can create that intervention and bedtime will be easier. The same situation if the child doesn't have a diagnosis of ADHD, right? Bedtime is still hard. So I can create a checklist, step one, step two, step three, it's done. So therapy can help with diagnoses, and whether there's a diagnosis or not, you can still get interventions that will help specific difficulties that a kid is having at home or in school.
What kind of accommodations have you seen work really well, like school-based accommodations?
That's a great question. I think extended time can be useful. I think for girls, maybe this is my own qualitative data, but I think many of them would benefit from having testing away from other folks or even in the front of the room, because I think for girls, they're a little more social in nature. So if they're in the back, they're going to be looking at all the things that are happening. So if we can get girls in the front of the room where they're not able to see all the things that are happening, that can be particularly beneficial. I think some girls really benefit from social skill groups, because again, girls tend to be a little more relationship based. And so if they're having a hard time with their impulsivity and what they're saying, a counselor might actually be really beneficial in helping them work those things through and even just integrate them into a social circle at school. I'm sure you have some other ideas too. What do you see?
I mean, I think if you look at, again, what are the priorities? What is the greatest impact? And that individual student, right? So I've seen some students work really well in front of a class. I've seen some not. I've seen devices in terms of just my tip before in terms of getting homework done. I have seen that's worked really well is a launching pad. In terms of when you come in the door, you can put all your stuff. And I've seen parents do it in big buckets. I've seen them do it in trash can, clean ones, fresh, whatever. But you know what I'm saying? Just even a carpet square. So you have one place to stick your items. So really thinking about what is the impact in terms of reading, helping pause after whether it's one sentence, a paragraph, and do a little margin, either note or picture to help. Sometimes some students really benefit from taking visual notes versus actually long form notes in terms of drawing a picture and creating a web from that. So really being individualized and systematic in how we support our students. I did a walk with Wendy on it recently. It was getting me thinking in terms of, you know, a student goes in to take a shower and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I don't even know if they stood near the soap. Do they know the steps in the shower? And then taking a clear shower curtain and with pictures taped to the outside of step one, step two, step three, and then take it a step further and get a shower mirror so they can actually see themselves. I know people can't see me I don't know why I'm mimicking washing my hair as I'm saying this, but they can see themselves actually washing their hair. So really making sure that, you know, and showing them what does that look like, right? So we tell our students, go clean the room, and it's not up to what that looks like. So what does done look like in a classroom? You know, I know that you're done when these steps have taken place. You know, you're done when these steps have taken place. So ensuring that they even know what done looks like, they know what the shower looks like. And so kind of making sure that we're chunking out the areas of impact and being thoughtful of to what best supports that child. And I love our kiddos that can actually tell us like that strategy really works well for me. That strategy does not work well. Fantastic. That's information we can build upon that. All right. That really works well for you. Okay. How do we then put this into action in other areas? How do we transcend that beyond this one classroom or our house? How do we make this work throughout? And these are life skills, right? Like if we're talking about what does completion look like? How do we ask questions? How do we advocate? How do we break down long-term assignments? These are all life skills that our students need to be successful, not only in the classroom, but on the job and beyond. And I think for us, there's a lot of school districts that have gone to no exams within a high school. And I'm now myself, other professionals are really seeing this huge impact. I don't know if you are as well, Amanda, but with our college age students that are getting to college and falling apart.
Absolutely.
Because they, those, whether if it's attentional learning, however it is, they don't know how to take an exam. So they never really learned how to chunk out their material, do a 5-day study plan, whatever that may be. And so I think, again, all of these items really do impact our students, but they also impact them in the work world.
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, I think part of it is continuing to think outside of the box for for our daughters and for other kids. So as you were talking about that, I realized I always tell people to use their planner. And you're talking about Google because they don't lose your phones. I think you're right about their phones. I always tell people to use their planner because they can doodle. Teachers don't really get mad at kids for writing down in their planner. They'll get mad if they're on their phone during class, or they'll get mad if they're doing something else. But if it looks like they're writing in their planner, they don't get in trouble. And a lot of times, kids need to be doing something else in order to listen. And that's a good thing. And so talking to our kids, what helps you learn?
Yes.
How do you stay engaged? What would make it easier for you when you're in that lecture? Or how can you remember to write this stuff down? But really starting the conversation, because I think that's the conversation that is going to help our kids when they're adults.
Yeah, that's right. And having them in tune of what works for them.
Absolutely.
Right? And then being able to advocate for it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And say, I can do this. Like, I can doodle and pay attention to you. I'll, you know, try calling on me tomorrow and we'll see if I'm listening. And say in a kind way you say that, but saying I can do this. Let's give it a shot.
As we wrap up, can you give me 3 tips for parents that they can use to successfully navigate their daughter's educational experience?
That's a great question. I think number one, start warm. I think teachers are going through so much right now and they have so many demands on them. And you will advocate better for your daughter if you start warm. I know you're probably scared, and starting warm and creating allyships to get you through whatever is coming up is going to be the easiest place to start, because I think teachers want to be your allies. It just can get tricky and it's hard right now, but that's where they want to come from. So let's introduce them from that place. I think number two is to use your resources, find your team, find folks that can support you, whether that's Google, great. Also have a discerning eye, but find a team of folks that are going to be on your team and make sure to talk to those people. Like a pediatrician, like the school counselor, like the teacher. And then I also think, honestly, educating yourself and educating those around you, because folks really don't know a ton about ADHD in girls. And I hope that this podcast is providing education to some folks. And I know there's a lot more out there that a lot of other people that need to learn more. And so advocating for yourself and your daughter.
What would be tips for professionals, specifically educators that have girls that either are diagnosed or not diagnosed? How can we better support our girls within a classroom?
I think, honestly, one time a week, I think educators should sit back for 3 minutes and say, what am I missing, right? Who are the people that I don't think about all of the time? Because I think it's really easy, whoever, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease or whatever that is, the folks that are having a hard time are getting more attention. And I think really putting time in proactively to look at the whole class or who isn't getting the most attention and trying to make sure you're trying to understand them as well, because I think that's going to give you opportunities to learn about those folks and maybe find some of this stuff out. I think looking at homework, looking at who's turning it in regularly, who is missing it, who has a ton of like scratch out marks and eraser marks, whose parent is doing a lot of the work for them. So really thinking about the homework and seeing what you can learn from how the homework is or isn't coming into you. And then finally, I would also just look at what are the social signs for girls? I think girls tend to have a few more subtle social signs that can be very informative. So getting in trouble for saying things that aren't always as nice and causing a lot of relationship drama with that, because I know you see it on the playground, kind of side talking and side chatting, and also some emotional outbursts, difficulty regulating their emotions, because that those can all be signs and symptoms of ADHD.
Tremendous value. Tremendous. As we wrap up today, is there something that I didn't know enough to ask that I should have asked you?
I don't think so. I think, honestly, if I were a parent listening to this, I would be like, oh yes, my daughter has ADHD. And then I can imagine taking it somewhere and then saying, no, your daughter doesn't have ADHD, and feeling really stuck, not knowing which way to go. And as we're talking about educating other folks, I don't want that to mean that you as a parent can be a sole diagnostician of ADHD in your girl. So I think it's really remembering that you're going in with your thoughts, you're listening to professionals, and it's gonna be a back and forth working together, because it is hard. And I think just understanding that it's gonna be hard is okay, because that's what parenting is, right? It's just, it's fun and it's lovely and it's hard.
It is. If you had one tip for parents to place on a billboard, what would it be and why? Final question.
Be patient with yourself. I think we are really in this world where we expect perfectionism and we want to be perfect. And there's so much information that we're getting from all these other sources, and we're never going to be able to achieve what everyone else wants us to do. And so I think just being patient with ourselves and knowing that there's going to be ups and there's going to be downs, and it's okay if we make mistakes, because everyone makes mistakes.
How can people find you?
So I work at Virginia Family Therapy, which is just www.virginiafamilytherapy.com. We provide therapy for folks actually across the United States and across the world. But I also host a podcast called Active and Connected Families. And it's really for folks who are working pretty hard. And we know that in order for our whole families to be healthier, we've got to stay active and we've got to stay connected. And it's fun, hopefully, and smart, hopefully, but I love doing it.
Thank you very, very much for sharing your information and your talents and tips for some little known information. So hopefully folks that are listening can have a best course of action to support their kiddo at home or in their class.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Wendy. I hope you have a great day.
You too. Thank you. Thank you again for strategizing with us and spending your precious ear time listening. If you've loved what you've heard, give us a like and a follow at Learning Essentials or the Special Ed Strategist podcast. Looking for free tips? Head on over to learningessentialsedu.com, and you can download free tips to prepare for an IEP meeting, plus bonus questions to ask. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. If you need more special education support, visit Learning Essentials, where we provide an individualized and systematic approach to supporting students with various learning needs and differences through academic coaching, educational therapy, and Brain Camp, our executive function support model. If you're a parent, we've got you covered through IEP coaching.